Time to celebrate. Once again, another one bites the dust.
I think it's completely legitimate to be celebrating when somebody absolutely repulsive warmonger who's caused the death of hundreds of thousands of people dies. I think, you know.
Yeah, and people are like, oh, but what about his family? It's like, I think his family probably didn't like him very much either. I mean, he was just a legitimately repulsive human being. There was no gray area there. Lindsey Graham was one of the
first... Oh, my God! Well, I'll say this. It was a great feeling to know that he's dead. It really made my day.
I mean, and he died doing what he loved, right? At least that's what they're saying, at least. Touring a drone factory in Ukraine, maybe doing coke with Zelensky.
Oops. He was the worst. And, the hypocrisy... Well, here's...
To one less warmongering piece of shit.
Yeah. For Trump to then say that he was like a loss of a family member. Lindsey Graham was a major anti-Trumper at, you know.
Well, you know, they're all family members in the same Sabatine, Frankist, inverted, like, inshittification world that they live in and that they're trying to force us to live in because they feel like they can get all of us to live in it, then they will be able to attain godlike status.
And you know, the thing that gets me about it is he doesn't fit, you know, because it's obviously everybody knows he was a closeted homosexual, you know.
Barely closeted. I mean, he was the only one who thought he was still in the closet.
Right. And of course, there's no objection to being homosexual, but there is objection if you're constantly sponsoring legislation against gay people.
Yeah, because it's so obviously conflicted. You're self-loathing. It's a self-hating homosexual thing. I mean, this is what we see with other people like Nick Fuentes. I mean, this is a whole thing, and they like these people because they're easy to manipulate.
Do you think it's self-loathing? I don't think they hate themselves. I think they're just hiding.
Well,
they're
homophobic and they're gay.
No, I don't think it's that because. It's a covering mechanism because he knows he's still operating from the legacy position of being a South Carolina senator and you know that wouldn't go over well, so he's got to overcompensate. I don't think he hates his homosexuality. Homosexuals love their sexual orientation.
I think maybe he was so conditioned to be ashamed of it as a young man that so I mean maybe hate is the wrong word, but like homophobia encompasses a lot of things besides hate. I mean this sort of like whole psychological hang up thing that people who've been conditioned like that have, the people who go to like pray the gay away camps and whatnot. I mean,
well, the biggest fags.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why they go to the camps. But
but he was a piece of shit. And there should be a tradition where people just urinate on his grave and they like film it and then they post it. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, there should be that tradition with like a lot of these people, like McCain and Cheney and Kissinger and all these people. Like, there should too many more, please. there should be like a tradition to see who has the most piss on their grave after a year because that measures where the global hate is sitting at any given time.
God. Now, if only, like, the Tom Cottons and the Ted Cruises and everyone would follow them, because they're going to pick up the slack. And
yeah, I mean, don't they have a Ukrainian drone factory to tour? Like,
I'm sure they do.
Or an Israeli drone factory to tour. I mean, right. Like...
But the point I was trying to make before, though, is that, like, you know... You don't, and I don't want to like pigeonhole people of gay orientation. No, that's not what this is about. But typically, the gay people that I've known haven't been particularly like warmongering pieces of shit.
Because they're comfortable with their sexuality and they don't feel the need to take it out on somebody else.
That's correct. And then they have better things to do. Yeah. You know. So then the question is why? Exactly, was he absolutely rabid?
He was uniquely rabid in his sort of like vehement. Psychopathic, just like hatred of all of Israel's enemies, basically, like the saying that the killing of Russians was the best money we've ever spent. I forget exactly what he said about kids in Gaza, but it was basically to the effect that they're all guilty and we need to get rid of them all. And right. It's like,
well, that was also That was his, also the ambassador's position about that was
Huckabee.
Yeah, he's basically said that.
Yeah. Huckabee is the one who thought that who met with Jonathan Pollard, the spy who betrayed the United States and who spent years in prison because of it, and then Trump pardoned him, and then Huckabee met with him. And
Trump's the best for the military, as he pardons the guy who's released most military
humiliation
secrets.
Ritual.
Yeah,
I mean, if you don't see it by now, you're not looking, and this is it's all our faces are being rubbed in it, and. They think that we're not going to do anything, and unfortunately, they might be right.
Well, and then he was received with hero's honors when Pollard landed in Tel Aviv.
Yeah. I think he still gets like meetings with the senior government officials there.
Absolutely.
I mean, like Smotrich and
so here's an example of what slithering little rats the Israelis are. Okay, so they're hailing him as a hero, right? But if you go back to the Pollard trial, when he was on trial and the investigation into his wrongdoing, his misconduct, he was passing secrets to the Israelis and he was demanding diamonds and money. Okay, so if that's your hero of Israel, somebody who was doing it because he had a hankering for large diamonds, because they were paying him in stones... Mm-hmm. Okay, that's your fucking hero?
Well, it does kind of embody the national character.
You know, I mean, that's so slimy. If he did it for nothing, okay, I could see that. But he was getting diamonds.
No, but that's, again, it embodies the national character. It's like what happened the other day with the settlers that held up Rokana at gunpoint.
Heard about that. Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you went on a fact-finding mission to the settlements to learn about violence in the settlements. I think you found some facts there.
Yeah.
And all he comes out of it saying is that this is really a double down on his need to run for president or whatever. And it's like, dude... I mean, I'm glad that he's one of like two people in Congress that are actually trying to push back against this NDAA amendment that's going to merge the U.S. and Israeli militaries. But I think that you got to do a little more than run for president there, dude.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this recent NDAA, which literally merges the U.S. military under the command structure of the Israeli military.
Irreversibly merges. They will be unable to untangle them after.
Oh, is that a part of the provisions?
Well, that's how it's done, how it's going to be done, because it'll basically just sink it under to the point where Congress will not have any say over it once it's merged in there, because it's all like Pentagon contracts and unaccountable shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, pity the and this is a transfer of the capital, because the stockholders who are the owners of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, General Dynamics, all these companies, all these stockholders who own the stocks in them, they have to be informed that as soon as Raytheon develops a new guidance system or whatever, by treaty, the Israelis get the plans, the schematics for it. And then, so the investors that are the owners of Raytheon put their money into the research and development of a new, say, guidance system for a missile or something, then as soon as they've discovered it and it's a new technology, it's by treaty, goes right to the Israelis, and then they sell it to China, Russia, whoever they, you know.
Yeah, and then adding insult to injury, there's the cybersecurity agreement, the Pax Silica, there's a couple of them, NSPM 12, there's a couple of them, but it's that, and then they use language about, oh well, we want to be with trusted partners that instead of having China get into our infrastructure, it's like, so you're partnering with someone who will literally sell your infrastructure to China.
The Pax Silica is Pax Judaica, actually, the bottom line is that with the advent, and here's one thing that everybody in the U.S. military, in the Pentagon, in the investment class, and just the general population needs to know. Here's the facts. So you take the very highest level of corporations in the military industrial complex, which currently right now is like Andrewell, stuff like that, because this is this company that is taking AI. And through AI, they're developing high-speed drones and autonomous killing drones and drones that are the size of cars, drones that are the size of apples. I mean, they have every single imaginable...
insect-sized drones. Yeah. Israel has ones that look like bees.
Andrew has that, yeah.
No, Israel does. I don't know about Israel. Andrew probably does, too.
Here's the rub. And same with Palantir, all the surveillance technology. Here's the rub. That a normal, free, Chinese AI model that you could run on your 24 gigabyte gaming tower can create the exact same plans and the exact same infrastructure that, say, Palantir has it could do it in an afternoon. So the only reason why Anduril and Palantir are these big companies is because of the Jewish ability to force the United States government and to force the government of Great Britain, to force the government of France to purchase Palantir products. Otherwise, there's nothing particularly special about Palantir, except that their CEO is on definitely ecstasy when he gives his, I mean, he's doing,
he's high on something.
He's speedballing ecstasy and coke at the same time is what he's doing. So, you know, so you have the CEO of Palantir who's dropping ecstasy tablets prior to giving.
And what kind of a sick fuck do you have to be, by the way, to be on ecstasy and still want to kill people?
Exactly right.
I mean, that's
well,
crazy.
It's a particularly unique kind of loathsome piece of Jewish shit that we have in the West, where they're privileged, they don't do anything, they're not particularly that talented, but they're Jewish, and therefore, since they're Jews, they get to control social media, they get to control the finance, control the
military. With Karp especially, I mean, the talk about an inbuilt self-loathing. I mean, he's half black, right? So his Jewish Karp is half black, yeah. So his Jewish half hates his black half.
Wait a second.
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Oh, dude.
He doesn't look at all black.
Yeah, he's half black.
And which half is black?
I don't know, but you saw it in the Dadie Vance cartoon when there was the angel and the devil and the one was a black dude.
Really?
Yeah, that's his black half.
I have to confirm that. So his mother must be
Jewish. No, he's talked about it, yeah.
Okay.
I think his mother is the Jewish one.
And her father is black.
Yeah.
Okay.
So talk about an inbuilt self-loathing. For
whatever
sure.
It is, there's. I don't know if I'm getting excited.
And he's never had sex with a woman, supposedly.
I that's incredible. That's incredible.
And to boast about that, it's like, I mean, I don't even know.
He's boasted about that in public?
Well, he's talked about it. I mean, I would say it's a boast because it's not something. I mean, he didn't say like that as in to feel sorry for him. He just said it in a way that Alex Karp doesn't say anything that doesn't come off boastful. Like he
wow,
yeah,
that's quite an. I mean, how could a man of how old is he? Give a 40 something, 50 years old?
I have no idea.
That's incredible that you would.
He said that at first it was that he was like too poor or something, and then it was that he didn't have time. I would have to look
up
the
internet. Sex with a woman, no time.
I don't know.
Okay, so that's a deal killer. That's a fucking deal killer, because that means you're a super fucking weird man. Okay, I'm sorry,
you can
man.
Tell that just by watching him. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but fortunately enough, there is some indication of a pushback, whereas some of the European countries are reevaluating their contracts and stuff like that.
But then you've got Japan, like, jumping on board the Palantir thing. Like,
oh, they're jumping on board?
That's what I read. I don't know if the deal has gone through, but they were going to, yeah.
So, if anybody in the ruling class thinks it's a good idea to have Alex Karp know every single email you've ever sent out, oh, ruling class billionaires, think again, my friend, because they're going to be able to have leverage over you. And that's the new Jeffrey Epstein. It doesn't have to be sexual. This is the point that Whitney Webb has made.
Yeah, and it's a very good one.
Sexual blackmail may not be necessary with Palantir in place because they know all of your predilections. They know all of your... They have built a complete profile on you based on their complete absolute absorption of every molecule of movement that you've ever done, every utterance that you've made, every email that you've sent, and they build an AI-generated protocol that says, okay, this guy likes to jerk off to squirrel porn.
That's the thing, and it's not even just a static profile, it's a digital twin, and they can use that to predict your behavior before you do it, and it's if they have enough data points, and they do have a hell of a lot of data points, they can predict your behavior better than you can, and that's really scary. Yeah. And people just continue feeding. Like Google even came right out and said that, like, users of its I forget which it's training one of its AIs on basically on your activity, and it told the users that, and the users are still clicking okay on the thing.
Well,
Meta too. Meta just filed a patent for this device that will you wear it as you're working out and with this like smart mirror or whatever, and it's there to eavesdrop on all the sounds around you, including the sounds that you make when you're just working out or moving around throughout the day. Supposedly, this is to fine-tune your workouts, to better workouts, but it's also listening to you throughout every other part of the day, and then it provides you with an emotional report card at the end of the day about, oh, when were you the most happy? When did you laugh the most? When did you sigh the most? And it tells you, and then you can work on this, or it's according... Amazon came out with a similar device a couple of years ago called the Halo, but it didn't take off because people thought it was dystopian and creepy. I don't know why suddenly they're they're going whole hog with all of these things that failed in the past. The smart glasses, the Meta smart glasses.
Oh, they're still going with that shit.
Yeah, and they're like, there was some influencer came out and said, oh, it's surveillance summer. Come on, girlies. Like, because it used to be that it was like associated with male creepers, like watching women with these glasses. And now they're trying to have the girls do it.
Watching women, what you watch them, and what is it?
No, you just creeping, just filming people without their consent.
Right, which, yeah. That's creepy. Yeah, that's not cool. You know, the part that gets to me, though, is that when you look at the structure of our society, you have the people who are appear to be somewhat resistant to this new trend that's happening, where where our leadership there's a schism. The people don't want to do this Israeli war. The leadership is full on in it, and it seems to be like. And the part that's somewhat encouraging is the Mamdani in New York, where when they interviewed the 7 candidates and they said, "What's the first place you'd visit if you were elected?" Cuomo says, "Israel. I would visit Israel." And then the next one's Curtis Sliwa. Where's the first place you would visit? Which is a stupid question anyways. It's obviously probing your allegiance to Israel, because that's not a normal question that you would ask a panel of 7.
Of New York mayors. It's like, why would you ask that question? Places.
So it's a test. It's a Jew test.
Yeah.
It's a Jew.
Loyalty test.
Yeah, loyalty test to Jew money, right? So they all of them said Israel, except for Mamdani, right? And then he got elected. Okay, so in New York,
Think he's legitimate, though? Because I think he's release valve.
In a way, yes. But when you see the candidates he's supporting that are also not particularly aligned with AIPAC and stuff, they're all getting elected. They're all winning their mm-hmm. yeah. So
it's a step in the right direction. I just think that there are a lot of people that are presenting this as like problem solved. Look, there's finally pushback.
Right.
We got to go a hell of a lot
further. If he's a Trojan horse, though, then why would they push these other candidates that are also then gaining?
Because this is for the same reason why they attack, why the media attacks Elon Musk, why the media attacks Donald Trump, because they know no one trusts the media. So if the media attacks someone, people are going to trust that person.
True. Yeah, that's how it is. And that's a good thing. Yeah, I like that. That's where we need to be, you know.
Well, the problem is that people fall for it.
because I did see Mamdani go into a bunch of Hasidics and have said, oh yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from him that indicates that he's legitimately going to be resisting. I mean, he'll say things that are great. They say things that people want and need to hear, especially in New York, where it's literally under the control of, I mean, the ADL has fusion centers in Brooklyn, as if there's so much anti-Semitism in Brooklyn, where there's more Jews than anywhere else on the planet except for Israel. So it's basically occupied territory. So it's refreshing to see someone at least come out and say nice things, but it's until there's actual changes. I mean, if he's actually successful in taxing the billionaires or making housing affordable in New York, I mean, making housing affordable in New York is definitely something that the Jews don't want, because they're responsible for it not being affordable. So
yeah, they own it all.
Yeah,
yeah. That was really one of the factors that really sharpened my dislike for these people. Was renting spaces from these people,
mm-hmm.
and you realize what absolute vipers they are.
Yeah,
in terms of
They won't even shake your hand.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Unclean.
Or if they do, it'll be like this. They'll give you a hand. It'll be like.
Oh yeah, I guess if you're a man, they'll shake your hand. But if you're a woman, you're
Go to shake my hand. You put the hand to me, and then I grudgingly give my hand to you. Watch this, how it goes.
Oh yeah.
And then
yeah.
It's a limp wrist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. That's almost worse. Yeah. At least you're.
It means
you're,
fuck you, and I'm going through emotions.
It means I am chosen, and you are not.
Jews do not like us. They call them they call us the goyim. The goyim.
Well, it's beyond that they goyim. Don't like us. They think that we're cattle and that we are basically
Amalek.
Human resources to be exploited.
Exactly right. And our property is their property.
Yeah.
And and this goes back to the Kahal, but it goes back many centuries prior to the invention of the Kahal in basically Lvov and the areas around Russia, which is how Jewish, the center of Jewish life, the center of Jewish power. It was a particular example at that time of the fact that there is a center of Jewish power, and it frequently changes. So it'll go from what it was in the late 1790s to the early 1820s, which is called the Kahal, is well documented in the Book of the Kahal by Jacob Brafman, B-R-A-F-M-A-N, Jacob Brafman, who was a Jew himself, and he had access to the archives of the Jewish Kahal, which was this organization that controlled the daily lives, the legal lives. It was like the government within a government. Well, we see for Jews, and this is where we see some of the machinations of these Jews, where they say, okay, if you like this house that a goyim has, you give us the money, you pledge a certain amount of money to us, and we will make sure no other Jew has access to the property. But you now, because you paid the kahal, you have the right to go after that goyim's house, and you could go after it by putting termites in there, by burning it down, by giving him a loan that he could not repay. But you have the sole rights to that goyim's house. This is the Book of the Kahal, K-A-H-A-L. But over the years, it turns into the Zionist Organization of America, the International Zionist Organization, the Zionist Conference.
B'nai B'rith.
You know, so the center of Jewish control, of Jewish life, of Jewish power. That's not even Jewish, it's Polish. But whatever, they call themselves Jews, but they're white, they're Caucasians, but whatever.
They're a very inbred, specific type of white that is not, I mean, there's a very, very small percentage.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, but they're definitely not, they have nothing to do with the Israelites of the biblical era.
No. Ashkenazis have no Hebrew blood, or at most 2%, which a lot of people would have that and would not be anywhere near.
Yeah, this is why genetic testing is illegal in Israel.
Yeah, you cannot.
Which you would think for such a Jewish supremacist state that's openly Jewish supremacist, that it's literally their basic law is like, this is the Jewish state. So why can't you like get genetically tested to make sure you're Jewish?
It's going
to
show that you ain't a Jew.
Impostor.
You're Polish. So what have every single prime minister of Israel except one been? They've all been Polish, and then you have Lithuanian, and then you have Ukrainian.
Pale of settlement.
Yeah, pale of settlement.
Beyond the pale.
But you don't have, if the person who is fucking you over, stealing your money, and controls your money supply has white skin, they're not a fucking Jew. They just have, my theory on that is, the Ashkenazi. My theory, and I think it's a damn solid theory, is that, remember I explained that in the medieval period, when usury laws were out in the Christian world, the king is not just going to allow the Jews to be the only ones who could profit from usury. So the king set up these people to pose as Jews, and they chose to use Polish, Ukrainian, Lithuanian, and they said, and the king would say to the Polish, say, you are the court Jew from now on. We split the money, you and me.
Yeah, and you wear your hair like this, you so everybody knows.
Yeah, go out, pretend you're Jewish, learn the ropes, and then we'll make some money. And the church probably went along with that as well.
Yeah, so no, it's a good theory. I mean, certainly, why would they cede control voluntarily over to this like hostile in-group? I mean,
and why would anybody in the Middle Ages, when everyone wanted to kill Jews, openly be Jews? Like, unless there was some underpinning reason to, and which was
the money. Know that the idea that everybody wanted to kill Jews was highly exaggerated, like the pogroms and everything. Like, a lot of these were, a lot of the news of pogroms that was published in like American newspapers and whatnot filtered through like this one guy in Eastern Europe who was like their man on the ground in Ukraine and whatever. So he was saying, oh, there's a pogrom with thousands of people, and then in reality it turns out there was not actually much evidence of that. So it's like having a war correspondent who you know is working for like this not exact a conflict of interest, let's say. So yeah, the idea that everybody wanted to kill Jews is probably not the case. But
Wait a second though, history is replete with that though. Nobody wanted them in their neighborhood. Jews were so repulsive that when a Jew was in your neighborhood, whatever, in your village, and it was the year 1400, you hated them. You hated them.
Well, usually they would have done something to make you hate them first.
That's right. And because that's what do you think the Jews, the purpose of a Jew was.
That's what pre-traumatic stress syndrome was all about. You think everyone's out to kill you, so you do something to make people want to kill you.
Well, no. No, I don't think it's that. The nature of the Jew is exploitative. That's like the air that they breathe. So it's not that it's a reaction to hatred that they cause them to do that. No.
And that's why I'm saying the hatred is imaginary. It's pre-traumatic stress. Read Gilad Atzmon's book. It explains the whole thing. I'm not going to be explaining very well because it's been a while since I read the book.
But the bottom line is that, like, especially, like, take, for example, Germany, right? Germans never liked Jews in their villages because they were so different and because they were so exploitive and because they always were acted as
the reason. It's the exploitation that came first, and the reason for the exploitation was that they had been culturally inculcated traumatized from birth by the act of circumcision to believe that they were persecuted.
Right.
So even if it was completely untrue, when Jews had just moved into a new land, they still believed everybody else was out to get them, even if everybody else didn't even know who they were yet.
Yes.
So they were the ones to cast the first. Yeah.
So then these both positions can exist concurrently.
Yeah.
The pre-existing condition that you're suggesting, but the automatic hatred that people had specifically because of their conduct.
Yeah.
People reacted to the conduct of Jews, not to...
Yeah, not just because they were different.
No, and Martin Luther made it clear in his book, The Jews and Their Lies, that pay no attention to the Jews when they say that the reason why the Goyim hate them is because of their killing of Christ. He said, that is not why we hate them. Martin Luther made it clear in his 15,
and yet people 43. Still fall for that line. Why is that?
Well, because they own the media now, and you're not allowed to That's talk true. About it anymore. But in 1543, in the book Jews and Their Lies, by Martin Luther, the person who was stood at the schism of the Catholic Church, the Protestant Reformation, which occurred 3 decades prior. I mean, this book, The Jews and the Protestant Reformation, was in the early 1400s. This was now 30 years later. He wrote The Jews and Their Lies. And then in this book, he said that, you know, much is made that, and the Jews will always try to tell you that, because even in the 1543, it would have been an that was modern enough a period of time. I know you say, oh, modern, 1543. Yes, it was modern enough that people would not accept some biblical charge from 1,500 years prior that the reason why we hate these Jews...
Well, they had the printing press, so they could at least read the thing for themselves.
That's correct. And that's right. The printing press had just come out a few years prior to that. Actually, it's the only reason why we have the Protestant church now. Had we not had that, we would not have read Martin Luther's 91 thesis or whatever they nailed on the door. So the bottom line is, though, that pay no attention to the reasons why. Martin Luther made it clear. The reasons why we don't like Jews is because they come into our villages, they take over the purchase of barley, wheat, grain, they own all the houses, they start moving on the property, and then they run the prostitution, they run the, you know, so they come into your village and they completely exploit your village. That's why we don't like Jews, and it's the same today, and that's what they're doing. They're buying up everything. And
yeah, so it's a total asset stripping operation from top to bottom. I mean, both in terms of physical assets, financial assets. Yes, the real estate. I mean, we've talked about the trailer parks. I think we did a show about
the trailer parks.
From everything from funeral homes, hospitals, like every physical asset you can imagine. And then also the spiritual assets, because they're trying to like shoehorn this Judeo-Christianity thing as being the official state religion. I don't know. Have you heard about this Religious Liberty Commission that Trump has?
No.
That just like released this huge report. Of course, one of the large chunks of the report that was hidden under the headlines about, oh, we need closer collaboration between church and state. Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh,
just,
really?
Yeah, let's just violate everything that, like, the Constitution is all about, like, the whole separation. No, well, that was a mistake. You know, 250 years of being independent is long enough. Let's just be Israel's bitch now. But, so this syncretism of, like, Judeo-Christian state religion is what they want to push. And also in this report, they had hidden, oh, yes, we need to punish anti-Semitism by, like, legal means. And
Well, none of this is actually Trump's idea. He's just, they write it.
No, Trump is the cover for this. Yeah. And they're deliberately directing all the popular hatred towards him, because
he's going to take the fall.
Yeah, he's
supposed to. I heard an interesting exchange between Professor Zhang and Alexander Dugin on Sneeko's show, where it was, I think I told you about that.
It was an amazing exchange.
Well, but they had, it was this Dugin, who's, I really love this guy's theories, and the way he thinks is pretty interesting. He said that in the end, that the deep state, he didn't call it the deep state, he called it the deep state, because he says there's a deeper state than just the deep state.
And there's quite a few.
He said that it'll be that the deep state will eventually hang Trump and his family out to dry, saying, okay, look at what these guys did, you know, and that they're gonna wreak all this havoc in the Middle East, blame it on Trump, but then all the reorganization of the political and economic infrastructure will still remain the same. It's not like it's going to revert. All the illegal conduct is not going to revert. So they get the change of the political and economic structures of the Middle East and of Latin America and stuff with Venezuela. And then they blame it on Trump. They hold him out to dry. He gets skewered, goes to jail with his family. But they still get their objectives, and they, you know.
Yeah, no, and everybody will be calling for blood, but they'll be calling for specifically
Trump's blood because
they plastered his face all over everything. Like Washington D.C. now, it looks like something out of 1984. Literally, his face is on everything, and that limited edition passport that they were like trying to get people to get on July 4th that has Trump's face plastered over the Declaration of Independence, which, by the way, every single thing in the Declaration of Independence, the Trump administration is violating. And it's like in the past, well, when we were a colony, we at least knew we were not. We didn't have like agency in the whole thing, and so we could have a revolution. But now we think that we voted for this, so people are not. It's the exact same thing. If you look at every single thing on the Declaration of Independence, they're doing all of it. There's even something in there about like giving over your authority to a foreign entity that is not accountable to U.S. laws. Mm-hmm. Although they didn't call it U.S. laws and that, but it's very much a calculated humiliation ritual. Mm-hmm.
A slap in the face. It's in your face is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, you know, I don't know why I somehow remain optimistic. I guess I'm reading I pay close attention to the financial reports, and unfortunately, sadly enough, the U.S. government is forcing the rest of the world into an even worse position. You know, I mean, I don't know if they'll be successful in
it. I don't know about that because like BRICS is working very hard on getting like a payment scheme so that they don't have to go through the U.S. dollar and do all
Saudi Arabia is already trading all their gold,
in yuan.
Not all of it, but a lot of it.
Because Iran had made it so they really couldn't do anything else. And that's that sometimes people have to be pushed up against the wall, and then necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. It's fascinating to watch how all the interplay between like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Kuwait, Bahrain, all these vassal states that, or former vassal states that are now realigning or attempting to hedge the collapse of the United States governing ability to send an aircraft carrier and actually feel confident that it could pull up to your shoreline. It can't do that anymore. They're starting to reevaluate their relationship with the United States.
Yeah, and so much for the Abraham Accords, eh?
I know. That's but that was a UAE deal.
Well, that was also Saudi, though. No,
Saudi never signed it.
I thought they were at least proposed as a.
Well, they've been pushing Saudi Arabia to sign it, but they never did.
Okay.
Saudi Arabia,
UAE is basically a full on suicide pact. He must be so blackmailed. I mean, he's the one that had like the torture videos, right?
That's correct. Yeah. So with the UAE, you have a number of emirates. So you have like Abu Dhabi, which is different from. Okay.
Bin Zayed was the one with the torture video. I
don't think it was Bin Zayed.
I
think it was Bin Zayed. That's incredible. Wait a second. No. It wasn't Bin Zayed with the torture. It was the guy who was in charge of Abu Dhabi, the place that's so horrendous. What's it?
They're all horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to.
Dubai? You're talking about Dubai?
Yeah, Dubai. Yeah. So the Dubai is Mohammed bin Zayed, and the guy who was in Abu Dhabi. But regardless of it, they're all engaged in this, the devouring of the flesh of children. And it's Israeli, it's the whole Middle East is the inflow of all the children, especially from Ukraine.
From Ukraine, yeah.
Yeah, that's where they're all heading. God, my heart, my just, it's the concept of the horrors of what is happening to these children in these brothels. Not brothels,
yeah,
it's
harems, an industrialized asset stripping of human resources, mm-hmm. where the children are the human resources.
The children get absorbed into the sex networks of Israel and of the Arab states there. And then when they're used up, their organs then are harvested. So, and right now there's a complete flood of kidneys, livers, hearts, lungs, eyes, corneas, all this shit, because they're just harvesting this from the children of Ukraine.
Yeah, I saw a video showing like a Ukrainian nightclub, like where the rich Ukrainians are partying, and it's like three quarters women and like one quarter men, because all the men have been killed.
Yeah, they're all dead. And that's the point of it. So when I see people like John Mearsheimer or some of these other people, they can't figure out why Ukraine is just wantonly sending men to their death and stuff. The answer is to clear the land so that Monsanto mm-hmm. could purchase it and Cargill. And how do we know this? Because just look at who's purchased the land, Monsanto and Cargill.
As Zelensky openly said, this will be like a big Israel, a big Israel with...
2.0, Israel yeah, 2.0.
He literally called it a big Israel, so...
Like, big Israel.
And there are people from Israel who see the writing on the wall in terms of like Iran bombing their country and excessively to their point, but not excessively enough to some other people's point. But yeah, they're moving back to their homeland.
That's what they're doing. Well, let's hope that like more war hawks die. Let's hope that, you know, like the Ted Cruz's, the Tom Cottons, and, you know, I mean, you know, I don't know, is it illegal to say even the Donald Trumps? Let's hope they have a heart attack or something.
I mean,
I don't know.
Definitely cruising for a heart attack. Well, yeah. Look, I mean, just looking at the guy, he's not well.
Very unhealthy. He's eating like McDonald's. We should encourage him to continue to eat
more McDonald's. It's patriotic.
Yeah. But you can't. I don't know if it's even legal, so I'm not going to hope that.
You can hope for that water will turn into wine and unicorns will flow out of the tap when you turn.
I don't think it's even legal to state that you hope that Trump kicks the bucket.
That's new then, because hope is not a legislative.
It's not a threat against.
If a drone crashes through our window and kills us right now, I guess we'll know.
Yeah. All I'll say is that. If there was to be a sudden departure, if Trump was to suddenly depart, you'll see another popping of the cork, let's say. You know,
invest in guillotine futures.
Yep. Yeah. All right. That's a rub.